When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
Sit down!
Carl slammed it home! Garland upstairs! Oh! Sexton inside! Oh. A thunderous dunk!
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim!
Welcome to the Chasetown Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. And connecting with me now live via Zoom is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Buddy, it's been a while. Things have happened. The team is different than it once was. It is exciting. It is a little wild that we haven't potted since all these free agency signings have become official.
Yep.
And we got a lot to hit on. We got free agency. We got summer league. My word, there's a lot to hit.
This is a big catch-up podcast for us, and I want to apologize for all of our listeners and viewers that we weren't able to podcast last week. Sometimes life can do to you what Kenny Lofton Jr. did to Chet Holmgren, which is body you. But you know what? We're going to catch up now. I apologize for that again. But there is another motive, and this is a hidden motive for why we didn't podcast last week, Carter. Do you know what this is?
No. We as usual, we didn't really do a lot of prep. So
yeah. So the other motivation I had was the fact that you deprived me of a JaVale McGee emergency podcast. I wanted to delay as long as possible your sense of fulfillment over finally adding Raul Neto to the Cleveland Cavaliers, Carter. Now let's hear some dulled down excitement that has been worn down with time.
Oh, just as excited as the day it happened, Justin. I've been such a fan of this guy's game, just a very capable point guard. Like, and obviously Rubio is a tier above among the class of backup point guards, but this is a guy that is perpetually available at the minimum, that perpetually starts games for his team, for teams he plays for, and doesn't kill them.
Yep.
And like at the minimum, starting games for a team and not killing them is very important and very valuable, especially at a very kill your teamable position in point guard.
Like, it's almost like the Jose Calderon, you know, Cavs legend and current front office member Jose Calderon, like just one of those guys that really, really reliable and seems to find a way into starting games every single year. I hope that he doesn't start too many games. I hope he doesn't take that personally. But we talked about it on our free agency preview podcast where I said, if you're bringing back Ricky Rubio, you probably need to have a contingency plan. And Raul Neto was the name that I brought up, someone that you feel confident that can fulfill that position and be that backup point guard. Now, I think there are internal playmaking options and internal growth may resolve that, whether it's Caris LeVert, Sexton, growth from Mobley, growth from other guys across the roster. But having a backup that takes care of the basketball, is a good positional defender, historically has shot well, even though he didn't last year with Washington, but you know that shooting touches there. I could not be happier. Like, I would be happy with Neto being our sole backup point guard, which I think is an important component when you're bringing back Ricky Rubio off an ACL tear. I said it before, and I'll say it again. Like, I understand the value that Ricky can bring on and off the court. I think he's great for their development, but you have to be ready for the possibility that he's not ready to contribute on court in year one.
Yeah, let's take it back a little bit before we dive further into the point guard. Just do a quick recap, because I find that is helpful, just to kind of see the shape of this Cavs roster thus far. They draft Ochai Agbaji and Isaiah Mobley. Those are the two that they expect to, you know, be on the roster this year, and both are signed. Mobley to a two-way. Then they go out and sign Ricky Rubio, Paolo Neto, and Rolo. And obviously extend Darius Garland on a just monster deal that is very, very exciting and, you know, wholly uncontroversial, which I think is very fun. It's annoying when you have to argue with Twitter about whether a player is worth it. It's nice to have a no doubter for once.
And I love the speech that Kobe gave too. I thought that was a great video that the Cavs put out, just talking about the significance of Garland being kind of the Cavs' first supermax contract and whatnot. And
key to the castle, baby.
Yeah, and I think we understand that Evan Mobley probably has the highest ceiling on this team and can be that kind of elite franchise player, but it's the nature of the position. When you're a point guard and you're the guy running the show, in a lot of ways, you have to be the team's leader. And I think Garland has shown that consistently. Like, you hear, even when Agbaji had his introductory press conference, he said the first person to reach out, once again, Garland. We heard that last year with Mobley. He's at Summer League. He seems so involved with all his teammates. And it's really nice to have someone like that. And like you said, for the signing to not be controversial at all, like, you don't see any pushback on social media, and fans across the league get it because he proved that he is a really special player last season.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously just really, really exciting. Darius is here for the long term. And, you know, you really believe that in a league where long-term contracts often don't mean long-term presence. I do feel like Darius is the kind of guy that wants to stick around for the long haul. But you look at the overall shape of the decisions that have been made. You have a high floor wing that is not expected to ever really develop into a great creator. You have obviously Isaiah Mobley, who is an older second round pick as well. That wasn't a crazy upside swing, though. I think I'm very fond of his ability. Then you sign a backup point guard, a backup to the backup point guard, and a backup center, and then lock up your franchise point guard. And to me, what this is telling me is a couple of things. One, Kobe is not as worried about the wing situation as we are. They could have thrown the whole mid-level at Kyle Anderson if they wanted. They chose not to. And I just think we're kind of breaking down the post play-in loss. I talked about how Kobe has to choose which lessons to learn from this season because it's inherently a small sample size with a lot of noise all around it. And you're going to have to make, a call on kind of what you want to address and what you think is just noise or something that's going to work itself out. And to me, Kobe learned that he decided this offseason, I am not going to lose a season because a position group got wiped out.
If you look at
what this team has, at the point guard position, which is such a point guard and center are somewhat singular positions. Like, you can have a 1/2 and you can have a 4/5, but the true ones,
fours play threes with Lauri Markkanen. We see twos play threes very often, and we're probably going to see a lot of that this year, but you're right. Like, point guard and center is a totally different animal.
They're kind of singular. When you have a true point guard on offense, your offense just runs better. When you have a true center to bang with the Jokic's and the Embiid's of the world, it really matters. And while I don't expect Robin Lopez to be in the rotation to start the year, the fact of the matter is the Cavs were one injury away from Moses Brown or Ed Davis all year last year.
Yep.
And, you know, those guys did their best, but they didn't quite bridge that gap between experienced vet that can be a leader in the locker room and not expect to play that much and still be able to go play 25, 30 minutes as a spot starter because Jarrett's out and you don't want to, you know, bork your whole rotation or you're playing Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
And so you kind of look at those two position groups. They're secure. We know the two guard is secure. We know the four is secure. And while the team you're going to, I know people are going to be thinking, what about the three? We don't have any Jason Tatum stoppers. Why don't we have any wings that are 6'8", 6'9", that are, you know, that have that bulk and the heft to guard the biggest wings in the league? First off, that's a problem a lot of teams have. Not a lot of teams have a Jason Tatum stopper. Mm-hmm. And second off, it's a position you can bridge. This team just won 44 games with Lauri Markkanen at the three. And they have enough twos that can swing up to the three and enough fours that can swing down to the three that I feel covered there in the sense that I don't think the three position could appreciably affect this team's ceiling in the regular season.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's what Kobe wanted to avoid.
Yeah. And you have to look at what options are available, like what players signed, what players have been moved for, like things that you could say maybe the Cavs would have a chance to get in on that bidding. And I completely agree with you. Like, I feel very confident about the way that they've kind of supplemented the talent that's already on this roster. Like, I feel really good about the point guard position. I feel good about the center position. I think you mentioned a really smart point about Robin Lopez, where he does give you an option that maybe some days he's not playing, but in certain matchups, like against a Joel Embiid, he's going to be someone that you can go out there and eat some innings, eat some minutes against these larger centers. And maybe that's a game where you want to have Mobley play strictly at the power forward position and be that kind of roamer, that disruptive presence. And I play the role that I think really makes him special on the defensive end of the court. Robin Lopez gives you that ability. There may be other matchups where you need to play a little bit more guards and how Neto gets more of a look. But I really do feel like you have so many guys that are maybe more of a two. Like I'd say Obagi's probably more of a two, as well as Isaac Okoro. But both of those guys can play at the three. I feel pretty confident of that. I mean,
Isaac Okoro spent an entire season playing almost exclusively at the three.
Yeah, and Obagi, I mean, you look at him at Summer League, and that guy is huge. Like, he may not be the tallest wing, but that guy is absolutely built. Like, I don't think he's getting moved off that position. He's got tremendous length. There's a lot of small forwards in the league at his size.
There are a lot of power forwards in the league at his size. I don't understand. I find this obsession with 6'8 wings. And like, listen, I care more about a 6'8 wing for the offense than the defense.
Yeah.
Like the being able to, you know, that's why I'm so, you know, I've been so enamored with Gordon Hayward over the years, is because being a 6'8 small forward that can run a pick and roll is really valuable. The defense, I mean, how long do we have to see Draymond be a defensive player of the year candidate at 6'4?
Carter, you're stealing my bet. We go away for an entire week, and all of a sudden you're just lopping off inches off of players' heights and adding them
for convenient. Fun. I actually did it for fun.
I appreciate that. I appreciate you filling in and taking a little bit of my role there. But you're absolutely right, and I'm pretty sure I said this on the last podcast. My brain is hazy, but I really do think now, looking at these three signings, that the Cavs are in a position to find out how much you can win now with the pieces you already have. Like with the young core, it's going to need to be the driving force. And maybe next summer, you're going to have to consider some real win now moves. But I think this year is going to be how much you can win now with the guys you have. And Garland, Mobley, and Allen, we've talked about this before, only played 40 games together last season. I think there is the depth here to allow the core members to not have to play too many minutes. Like I think just the competition within these guys that can flex from the two to the three, you're going to have to see like a split of minutes, because I think there's a lot of guys that are going to be able to earn those minutes. I think it's a really, really healthy environment, and they're going to be built to maybe sustain an injury or two. And you look at further down the roster, guys like Lamar Stevens and Dean Wade, they're probably not going to be in the regular rotation. I don't see them being penciled in there, but we've seen that this team can win basketball games with Lamar Stevens or Dean Wade playing significant roles. That's really good depth to have in kind of that 12th, 13th, 14th man in your roster.
Lamar Stevens, I mean, to put it simply, Lamar Stevens and Dean Wade are not you know, Moses Brown and Kevin Pangos, where you put guys in situations where you're like, oh, I hope this works. Like, we know it works.
Yeah.
You know, and Moses Brown gave the Cavs some good minutes this year. It's not to denigrate the performance, but there's just a certain lack of control that the team had there. You know, there's a reason they had to go to a guy they signed mid-season to start games for them. And mm-hmm. again, like, you look at, so let's just say Lowry goes down. Okay, they have a billion competent options that can come in and start at the three. If Evan gets hurt, they can slide Lowry or Kevin into the starting lineup and still keep the train on the tracks. And, you know, I think that this really was, I remember when we were doing our spaces during the draft, and Trevor Magnotti, dear friend of the pod, said that he felt like the Ochai Agbaji pick was a vote of confidence in the rest of the core.
Yeah,
I think free agency has just continued that thesis. They're saying, hey, we actually think that our top 3 to 5 guys are really, really reliable.
Mm-hmm.
And we just want to see how we're looking. We don't have to make a big splash right now. And, yeah. You know, I do think it's fair to take an issue with a few parts of this this offseason. I think obviously there's a big name we haven't talked about yet that is, you know, that is lingering. But before we talk about that big name that everyone knows that we're going to need to talk about, I do want to ask you about the Rubio signing specifically. Yeah. You know, they you know, reportedly got locked up to, you know, a decent term.
Yep. 3-year deal.
And what do you think? Because I won't lie, I had some mixed feelings.
I felt pretty good about it, especially with it being paired with the Neto signing. Like, I really do think having Ricky Rubio around, like, you could tell the impact it had on the roster. And when you kind of look at just the whole situation as a whole, I felt pretty good about the playmaking of this roster to begin with. And that was one of our main topics going into the kind of free agency preview podcast that we did. And having Ricky around, having some term on that deal, reportedly having some term on that deal, you know, it makes me feel better about it, because I think he's maybe not going to be as equipped to contribute on court this season, but I do think that he's going to help you get more out of your playmaking throughout the roster by being there. And I think it's a really smart investment in that way. I think it also says a lot about just kind of where this team has come from it and where they are now. Like, you look at the reporting around the time of the Ricky Rubio trade last year, and Brian Windhorst was talking about there being hesitation about Rubio wanting to be in Cleveland and whether or not it was going to work out, and for him to now make the decision as a free agent to come back here and feel a connection to what this team is putting together, to me that makes a big difference. And I think Neto is a value signing. I think Lopez is a value signing. Like, these are guys that I don't think are going to cost you a game if they have to start a game alongside your other starters. Like, I think they're really good system fits, great value, great veterans on and off the court. So when you look at the signings all in tandem with one another, and sometimes that's the best way to view an offseason rather than analyze each individual transaction, I feel really good about it. And personally, like, I'm just happy to have Ricky here. I have questions about what's going to happen with that number 3 jersey, though. I think he and Caris LeVert might have to fight over that.
You know what? We'll let them sort that out behind the scenes. But I think, you know, with Ricky, I think if you're concerned, you kind of say, hey, are we just chasing vibes here? Mm-hmm. You know, that, you know, I've often made fun of, you know, NBA writers for, you know, overly buying into culture.
We make fun of heat culture all the time, right?
Well, yeah, and buying into culture when culture really typically just means they won a bunch of games. And then when they don't win games, they've lost their culture. as a basketball commentariat, really, really like to just attribute vibes to wins, when oftentimes it's really talent. Mm-hmm. And you know, strong systems that lead to wins.
I will say, as a fan, and I'm always grateful that I'm able to stay in this lane as a fan, I value vibes so highly.
Oh, like, dude, same.
Like, that it just helps me kind of form that connection. And I think you're right. Like, I think to some extent this is, you know, kind of committing to the vibes of at least this specific signing. But I think it's also similar to the Agbaji pick and that comment you mentioned that Trevor made, where it's a vote of confidence for the guys that are already here, that we feel like we have enough talent, even if Ricky isn't ready to contribute this year. And we feel that the best path forward and the best path to raising our ceiling is by internal growth with these players that we've already committed to, these young players that we've already committed to. And we think Ricky Rubio helps that path to those guys realizing their ceiling. So I really do feel like it's a vote of confidence. I can see the concern with kind of making that commitment to someone coming off of this injury at that age. And there's obviously implications that come along with it. But I do feel like this is another vote of confidence in the young talent that's already on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that it's a vote in the young conference, but it is also a substantial bet that Kobe Altman is making that this guy is going to come back and be 90% of what he was. Mm-hmm. When you're at Ricky's level of athleticism, you don't have a lot more to lose. His finishing around the rim was not good last year.
Yep,
and you worry that there's going to be just enough more drop off that it goes from not good to catastrophic. And if that happens, then, you know, we're really starting to get a little bit gamey here. Now, yeah, with that said, I think that in a world where he's playing alongside Colin Sexton and Caris LeVert, he's not going to be asked to finish plays as often as he was the first half of the season and in year two, Evan Mobley. So I 100% see the case. I think the reason I just hope that they aren't expecting, I hope that they don't think he was the reason, like, mm-hmm. Because if Ricky Rubio is the entire reason your season was going so well to start and you kind of are chasing those vibes, I think you're probably going to be sorely disappointed, because we've said it a billion times, this team goes as far as the core trio can kind of carry them.
Yeah.
The other thing that I think was a little challenging about it is the fact that although I'm so thrilled he's here, you did have to sign another point guard on a team who has a weird roster glut, you know?
Yeah.
Like most, you know, 2 years ago, if you would have told me, okay, they have two guys on, you know, reported to be not super guaranteed deals at the end of their roster, you could just kind of let one go and, you know, it'll all work itself out. But I freaking love Lamar Stevenson, Dean Wade. Yeah. Those guys were really important for them last year and will likely be important again this year if they have, you know, injury bad luck again. And, you know, they just, this puts them, they're at 15 roster spots right now.
Yep.
So if they want to bring back Colin Sexton, I'll go ahead and say our dear volume scorer's name.
You're going to have to Voldemort or something. What's going on?
I don't know. I just thought it was fun.
You're being
fun
weird.
Bet. I just thought it'd be a fun bet, but I'm ready to walk it back. You know, I think, you know, you're at 15 right now heading into the year, and Colin's still out there in restricted free agency. And now this decision to bring back Ricky Rubio, I think, has indisputably put them in a spot where they have to make another call.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's a big pill to swallow, to make a roster decision for a backup point guard who is only going to play half the year. So, like, I think it warrants some criticism, especially if their road to being able to make room for Colin is something that is asset negative for them.
I will say this: most rosters do carry three point guards. Like, even last year, we went into it with Kevin Pangos being the third point guard. So if Howell Neto's playing that role, I'm fine with that.
But those rosters don't also carry four shooting guards.
hey. I am still adamant that Ochai Agbaji can play a lot of three and should play a lot of three for us this year. But you are correct. I mean, it does make a roster crunch. And I think that's part of why I'm kind of like being patient with this whole situation. You look at like the lack of information out there about Colin Sexton. It doesn't seem like this is something that's getting ugly and fought
radio
through the media.
Silent, man.
Yeah, it's not something being fought through the media and whatnot. And, you know, like, I think everyone that's listened to the podcast knows how we feel about Sexton, knows that we want him back. I mean, I got a Sexland poster behind me right now. Like, I'm a big Sexton fan, but I also like understand that these things do take time. especially given the situation. Like, I look at Sexton and me, like, when we have our discussions privately or when we talk to Nam or whoever, like, when I look at Sexton, I'm thinking of 2020, 2021 Sexton, putting up the numbers he did, how he and Garland grew throughout the year, and how their numbers individually got better together. And I want him back, obviously, but the Cavs have to weigh the entire situation. Like, for every success story, there is a Lonzo Ball where there's, you know, even if there are great stretches, there are setbacks. And all of these factors have to go into consideration. A roster spot obviously needs to be opened up as well. You have to evaluate that. Like, there's no sense taking less if you're moving off of one of the existing players on this roster to open up a roster spot, or potentially open up the possibility of a sign and trade. Like, whichever direction they go, you'd need to open up a roster spot. So I kind of have an understanding that this is something that has a lot of moving parts, can take a lot of time, and with big names still available on the free agent, like, sign and trade market, whether it's Kevin Durant, DeAndre Ayton, now Donovan Mitchell, Woj reported today, there may be an opportunity to clear up a roster spot by getting involved in one of these deals. There's so many moving parts and so many things that we can't really know. And historically, this has always happened very quietly, that I kind of understand that, hey, like, it sucks. I would love to have a resolution. It makes it easier to talk about on the podcast. But both sides have to advocate for their side, and there's no real benefit to doing it week one. I think we're 6 days into free agency now. There's no real benefit of doing it now versus 3 weeks. Like, it's just something that you'd really want to have resolved prior to training camp, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you feel for Colin, who, you know, I'm sure would love this to get resolved. You know, no one wants their free agency to drag out weeks and weeks and weeks, but, you know, this is, you know, structurally part of the game, you know, and it's going to be really interesting where the Cavs have all these different incentives that they have to balance. Like, because if you are of the mind that GM should squeeze contracts for every bit of leverage they can get, you know, that's a dangerous game to play. Mm-hmm. This is a keep people happy kind of league.
Yep.
And you know, you don't want to put you know, you don't necessarily want to put the nails into someone just because you can.
Yeah.
But also, and you don't want to overpay. Like
And I feel like the fact that it's not ugly in the media kind of is at least a positive sign. Like, I understand that there are moving parts, but you're right. Like, you don't want to act completely on sentiment, and you don't want to be completely cold with the situation. And maybe this is something that is going to come down to, you know, incentives to bridge the gap, right? And that's something that takes time and negotiations, and there's so many factors. And it was funny. I think it was Bobby Marks that mentioned, kind of compared Colin's situation to Lowry last year, saying that there isn't value, the teams don't value him. And I was sitting here being like, I thought Lowry was an example of, we don't really know which teams value players.
Lowry fetched a first round pick.
Well, kind of.
That's value.
Yeah, I mean, the Cavs were willing to move off of Larry Nance Jr., a draft pick, and give him a long-term deal because they valued him so much. And they were not connected to him once. There was not a report of interest. There was nothing there. And reality is, right now, you look at the teams with cap space. It's the Indiana Pacers, who a lot of the reporting suggests are going to use that space on DeAndre Ayton, and the San Antonio Spurs, who do not appear to be interested in winning basketball right now. So if there are other teams that are interested that aren't mentioned and negotiations aren't happening in the media, it can be a Lowry Markkanen situation. Or it could be a situation where the Cavs are working with Colin and they're working towards bridging that gap and finding compromises that work for both parties, because the biggest difference between Lowry and Colin is the organization has said multiple times, Kobe has said multiple times, we value Colin, we value the young bull, we value the fact that he was a big part of turning this culture around and is obviously someone that the team likes having around. So, it's just the understanding that this can take time. I'm happy we're not doing like a daily radio show where this has to be a topic we
discuss. And to watch.
Yeah, I it's just there's not a lot to talk about. If there's new reporting, obviously we can do that, but it's just understanding that these things do take time. And Lowry, like the Lowry signing, I think it took like 3-4 weeks before that occurred. And you know what? One of the things I love, Carter, honestly, about being a Blue Bomber fan and a CFL fan is like, I have no idea what anyone is paid in that league. Oftentimes, I don't even know what the offseason moves are. I just go into training camp and I'm like, oh, what's the roster? We lost that guy? Oh, it was because we had to make some clearance for someone else and keep these guys. Oh, that's fine. Like, at the end of the day, if it gets resolved this offseason, you go into training camp, he's on the roster. It doesn't really matter if it happened week one or week three or week five. Like, it's just, we were kind of in a holding pattern right now to figure out what form this situation is going to take.
Yeah. And I still expect him to be back. What the nature of how he's back is, you know, the more germane question. And I understand that. And, you know, you see the reporting about, you know, how close they are to the tax and all that fun stuff. And, you know, we're just going to have to wait for it to play out. I do think that we know a couple things. We know that in order for him to be back, something has to happen.
Yep.
A roster spot has to be opened up. You cannot carry 16 rostered players into the regular season. You can have up to 20, I believe, in the offseason is what the reporting is. But, you know, they're going to have to make some hard choices. And, you know, to put a pin on the Ricky thing, I do think that's why they better be sure they're right with this bet, because this is not just signing a player to a contract. It's signing a player to a contract and then a series of moves to account for that signing that you have to, you know, be ready to stand by. Yep. I see the case where it works awesome. I see the case where it's painful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you were to attach assets to get off a salary or something like that, that's, you know, that has to go into your accounting of the Rubio signing. And if it doesn't pan out, then, you know, I think people will rightfully be like, what was all this up? Were the vibes that worth it? But again, I think it's just as likely that things work out awesome and, you know, there's no pain at all. But I do think the risk has to be addressed in that signing.
Yeah.
But you know where what was a no risk signing? And I know we touched on it a little bit, is Robin Lopez. I love that guy, Justin. What a great signing. You have a big who was willing to go sign in Orlando, knowing that he was second, third, fourth or fifth on the big man depth chart at any given time on that team. And it's like, hey, you're not going to hear a word from me if I'm not playing. I'm going to be a great role model. I'm going to put my hard hat on every day.
I can teach Mobley how to set screens.
I'm going to be a social media darling. I'm going to beat up mascots. But when I'm called on, I'm still a really capable center for 25 minutes a game. This guy can play drop coverage. He's smart as hell. He can beat switches in the post with his weird jump hook. He's a box out fiend. Do not be fooled by, you know, relatively low rebounding numbers. Mm-hmm. Lopez brothers, across their careers, teams have rebounded better with them on the floor while they pull down 5 rebounds a game. And it's because they box out like crazy and just let everyone else vulture.
Yeah,
and
I think Russell Westbrook's favorite type of player.
I'm sure. And I, you know, and you look at a guy like that and you look at this team in the Cavs with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, who frankly were not box out fiends last year.
Yep.
To put it nicely. I think
Allen did a good job on the defensive boards, but
he was solid, but he still mostly out jumps for boards in my opinion. Okay. And I don't think there's a better role model for these guys than a guy like Robin Lopez, who's going to beat him up on the practice court in a good way. And, you know, really, I think set a good example for them, as a veteran leader, that, you know, I just don't think they had that style of player on the roster last year. So it's really, really exciting. I think it'll be nice to be able to throw him in there against the huge bigs of the league and save Evan those backup center minutes where he has to guard Nikola Jokic.
Way to battle through that yawn.
It was a burp, actually. I'm drinking an IPA.
Gross.
I know. I think I wanted a center. You know, I wanted one. I love Evan as a backup center. I hate that Evan or Jarrett going down means we have to either play, you know, an end of roster two-way type of player or slide Lowry or Kevin to the backup five, where I just think we're food on defense at that point against a lot of matchups that are smart.
Yeah, and even looking at like that Milwaukee game where it was the back-to-back, I think three games before nights, Jarrett was out, and then all of a sudden Garland had no one to screen for him while Jrue Holiday's hounding him. Like, we saw how different that matchup was when the team wasn't exhausted and when Allen was present. All of a sudden that became a lot easier for Garland to handle. And Lopez is a great system fit. And JB talked about it at the Summer League game yesterday, or I guess that was 2 days ago, where you're saying we want to have a little bit more offensive versatility. And I think supporting pieces like this, having Neto to be someone that can run plays and set the table, is going to allow for off-ball actions. Having more screen setters, guys that know what to do, a skilled dribble handoff big man like Robin Lopez that rolls hard, that plays hard, that can eat some minutes. Like, all of this stuff helps those young guys not have to do that kind of dirty work and really work on expanding their game. So I'm really excited about the Lopez signing. Like, that's as great of a backup center signing as I think you can have. Because like you said, there isn't going to be necessarily the expectation of minutes, but he's a guy that you feel confident you can go to if you need him to eat those minutes. So that's a really exciting responsibility.
I think he is the best player that you could sign at that position that would not be bummed that he wasn't in the rotation.
Yeah,
that is the way I would frame that.
That's probably a good argument.
And you know what? I don't want to take Evan off the floor for backup five reps. I think playing in that role is important for his development. So it's just is such a perfect fit. Again, all three guys, Neto, Rubio, and Lopez, all just elite vibes guys, well-liked in the locker room, hard workers. Kobe Altman as a type, I'll say that much. And
here's the thing. Like, when you mention that you do like Mobley as a backup five, and I do too. Like, I like having one of Jared or Mobley on the court at all times, but having these other options you can go to allows you to make tactical adjustments against certain matchups. And I think that was something that they had some of last year, and that was kind of reflected in which players they would use to close and things like that, but they didn't have a lot of it. And as the season went on, they had less and less of it as all those injuries occurred, and they kept losing ball handlers and losing all this supplementary talent. So I think they're in a much better position where you can make those tactical adjustments because you actually have the personnel to execute that. So I definitely think it makes a big difference. And while we're on the subject of rotations, a friend of the podcast, Spencer Davies, did a terrific article for Basketball News talking about the Sexton situation, and had a really interesting excerpt about Ochai Agbaji. He talked to a Cavs source who said there's no real expectations for him. He doesn't have to play or contribute right away. Go check out Spencer's work. He does a terrific job. But I thought that was an interesting quote. My
shout out to you for misquoting Spencer's quote. There's really no expectations on him, the Cavs source said. He doesn't have to play or have to contribute right away. You said there's no real expectations. There's a difference.
there is a difference. You know what? Thank you. Thank you for holding me accountable there. Sometimes my reading can be a little...
That's why I got the journalism degree. That is over my left shoulder, if you're watching on YouTube.
Sometimes you need someone that can carry, and sometimes you need someone here for the vibes. And
actually, that's Kylie's degree. I'm thinking about it. Never mind. That's not my degree at all. But with that said, let's talk about the quote, because it's an interesting one, because some people got real huffy about it.
They did. And I, if I'm not mistaken, I think quotes like this were there with Isaac Okoro, where it's, hey, you know what, like, he's gonna have to go out there and earn minutes. And we talked about the glut that the Cavs have at kind of the 2-3 and guys that might have to play a little bit out of position to get minutes. Like, I think it's the right thing to say. Like, there are legitimate options up and down this roster. Like, Caris LeVert's there, Isaac Okoro, you can assume he's going to earn some time. And I think the interesting thing about Agbaji is I think he works well every single combination of guys. I think he works with Sexton, Okoro, Lowry, LeVert. He can either push someone and take their minutes, or if they grow and they excel and work within the team concept, he can work alongside those guys. But to start, he's going to actually have to go out there and earn those minutes himself. And I think you look at some of the play in summer league, and I feel pretty good about his ability to earn minutes. But I think it creates an environment with healthy competition, because every single person in the locker room that plays at those positions can view Agbaji as a threat to take minutes from them, or someone that's really going to help them out when they're on the court. And it's going to come down to who develops, who earns the minutes. And I think that's there's room for everybody in the rotation, but it's going to come down to what works best within the team context, which I think is the right approach to have.
I think this was, in a lot of ways, good old-fashioned expectation setting speak.
Yeah.
You know, hey, this guy, he's found money for us, which, by the way, he is. Mm-hmm. They weren't even expecting to have a first-round pick this year. And you know what? It's also true. It's not saying they don't expect him to make the team. It's just, hey, if he's not in the rotation, it's because something else great happened, you know? And, like, you know, and I think that, first off, I do expect Agbaji to be in the rotation. Mm-hmm. I think he's such an inherently plug-and-play player and has shown enough in summer league, which I know we're going to talk about that, that you kind of see it with him and you kind of say, okay, I've seen enough that Darius Garland's going to like playing with this kid. Yeah. And I do think he's going to be in the rotation. I don't think he's going to get more than 15 to 20 minutes tops per game early on.
I'd say probably 18 minutes.
Did I lose you?
No.
Oh, no. you were being such an active listener.
Yeah, I was.
You looked frozen on my screen, and everyone knows about my well-established internet issues. No, we're not editing this out. I'm not making two edits in a pod. No, thank you, sir.
Let's dwell on this for one second. I am
looked so frozen.
I am such a bad co-host, and I'm such a bad listener, and I'm so self-involved that me attentively listening to you made you think something went horribly wrong with the podcast. That's a great sign.
You were so frozen. It was unbelievable. I was looking for any motion before I stopped down. That's wild. Anyway, back to the Agbaji stuff. I do think he's not going to play more than 15, 20 minutes a game. There's just too many more well-tenured mouths to feed, especially if you are expecting Colin Sexton to return, which currently I still am, at least for next year. And, you know, I think it's going to be hard for him to find a role. But what's nice is on nights he's just not playing well. JB can just be like, hey, we'll see you next time, buddy. Yeah. We're just going to go with a 9-man rotation instead of a 10-man rotation today. You know, so like, and I do think, by the way, in order for Neto and Agbaji to play, he probably has to play 10, which is crazy because this is a guy who played 8 most of the for big stretches of last year when the team just started dropping like flies. So it'll have to be an adjustment for JB if he wants to feed all these hungry mouths.
Yeah, and, I think it's going to have to be 10. And I think now there's the personnel for it. And I think we're actually going to learn more about how he wants to use personnel and how deep a rotation he's going to use. Because to start the year, Garland got hurt in the first few minutes of the season. Played through that Memphis game, but then missed the next two. Okoro then missed some time immediately. Then Kevin Love and Lauri Markkanen went out with COVID. And before the time they got back, Colin Sexton got hurt. We never had a healthy rotation, and we don't know how JB would use a healthy rotation. And it's amazing that for a season where we feel like we found an identity, there was a lot of success on the court, there are still so many unknowns. And I think that's part of why when you see the free agent signings that they made and kind of the bet to see how much can we win now with what we have, I understand needing to do that because there was just so many unknowns last year. And I agree with everything you said about Agbaji. He seems like the guy that isn't taking anything off the table on either end of the floor out of all the options there. And that's really, really exciting to me.
Yeah. And I think it's probably time to talk about our summer league impressions, Justin, on the back end of the podcast. It's been interesting. We're 2 games in, by the way, super spread out. It feels like there's 5 days off between each game. I know that's not true, but I'm starving for Cavs basketball.
Yeah.
What have been your big takeaways, man? Because it's actually, I feel like it's been a pretty instructive summer league so far.
I've seen everything that I was really hoping to see with Agbaji already. I love the defensive activity. I love the shots that he's taking. you knew going in that he wasn't going to get a lot of easy looks or any easy looks. We saw that last year, even with Mobley not being able to have kind of the high-end point guard play that you'd have with Darius Garland. And the fact that he's willing to take those tough shots, like the first three shots he hit in that first game were all very difficult. And he is willing to rise up and attack those shots. We saw him attack closeouts as well, a little bit of that. I still think he's thinking through the game a little too much and needs to develop those counters. But the fact that he is willing to take a tougher quality of shot than he's likely going to get with the big club is a great, great sign. And all the intangibles are there. He looks huge for his size. Like, he's such a big, strong, physically mature player already. And I love the fact that even though he's not getting rewarded for it, he's sprinting down the court every single time. There is no like Garland or Love or Mobley looking to headman the ball in the same way, but that isn't deterring him from doing the right things. He's also a really good kind of off-ball screen setter as a wing. I think that's something that's underrated. Rebounds well. He just does all the little things that I think he's going to need to do if he's going to earn minutes within the rotation.
Yeah, I've been pretty impressed in a way that is interesting because I was kind of, I feel like you watch Summer League to see surprises. Oh, that part of their game's more developed than I thought, that's going to be a problem at the next level. And I feel like it's kind of been the Summer League of no surprises for the Cavs, but confirmations. Yeah. I feel like Agbaji's catch and shoot, when he has his feet under him all the way, when it's a true catch and shoot, it just feels effortless for him.
Yeah.
He is clearly testing his ability to shoot off of motion.
Yeah.
You know, when it's a dribble handoff, where he's taken, a short sprint of 6-7 steps, I think it looks pretty pure. When he is doing the full Danny Green baseline sprint, he is a little bit rougher, to be honest. He had, about as bad of an air ball as you'll see in an NBA game, again, in that kickoff. And a lot of it is he just, going to the NBA three-point line is a challenge for him right now, to really not have your legs under you. But what's encouraging is he's not going to have a lot of those baseline sprints from three that make this hard on him.
Yeah, and I wouldn't mind seeing him take some of those tougher shots too, right? Like, I think if you look at the season numbers and you look at the player tracking data, and he shoots well on like open catch and shoot looks and that sort of thing, but then also has those movement threes, like, I want to see that be part of his repertoire. And I think in the coming months, you're probably going to see the Cavs work with him on his footwork in those situations. I think there is room for growth in getting him set when he's sprinting off of motion. I love the shot that he had in this last game where he sprinted to the corner, turned around quickly and released. And with how quick that release is, I think it's going to open up possibilities for little counters. Like, guys are going to have to close out really, really hard when he's running on the perimeter, because he has such a quick release, and that's going to create opportunities for him to have an escape dribble, get into the paint a little bit, and do the dump off passes that we saw in the last game. Like, Isaac Okoro.
Do the Cavs have good options at the dunker spot right now, Justin?
Yeah, they usually do. And he seems to make good reads in those situations. It's just, I don't think his ball handling is necessarily there to like open up that kind of playmaking. And it's very similar to Okoro, where I think Okoro needs to work on the ball handling so he's able to take advantage of those opportunities. Whereas Agbaji, I think the ball handling isn't as important because of the threat of the jump shot. Like,
Okoro's problem is that he doesn't have either right now.
Right. And I think Isaac being able to, move around and open up those opportunities, I think would be really beneficial and would earn him a lot of minutes. But you look at Agbaji, and I think he's as advertised. He got the endorsement from the GOAT podcast with Ben and Andrew. They have deemed him to be him, while others are not him. So I think that's a good sign as well. And I'm just really excited for it, because what I love about Summer League is you get to see the work that players put in between the college season and the combine. And now we get to see, okay, from this point, what happens the next 3 months working with the Cavs training staff and going through all the offseason stuff that they have for him? What growth are we going to see before training camp starts? That to me is really, really fascinating.
Yeah, I think the thing with Agbaji's, you know, processing speed, it's still not exactly where you need it to be. Mm-hmm. I think as DH in our Discord said that, you know, he's making a lot of plays that you think are pretty exciting. Like he threw that skip pass to the corner against Denver. It was just at 0.7 speed. Yeah. Like, you know, against an NBA defense, it's probably a pick six the other way.
Yeah.
He's
still thinking things through for sure.
Still thinking things through. And, you know, he's not so comfortable with the ball that he can do it. But I do think his playmaking, I would never say his playmaking is good or great.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's making the no-brainer dump offs to the dunker spot that actually really matter. And like, I think that, you know, that's what you want to see from him, for him to not get just, you know, run off the 3-point line and then nothing bad happens to the opposing team. Like, you need to be able to make other teams pay when they sprint at you at the 3-point line. And I think he's shown enough that he's going to be able to do that at least some of the time. And that's pretty exciting. Should we talk about Isaiah Mobley just a little bit, just because he is the other rostered player that we probably will see get some minutes at some point for the Cavs this year. Yep. What do you think about Mobley? What has anything caught you off guard? What have you observed from him?
Man, is he a good passer? We knew that coming in. Just has a really smart feel for the game. I feel the same way that I felt after the draft with him, where I think it's very clear, like, two-way contract, get some time with the charge, adjust the three-point range, the NBA three-point range. I think that playing opportunity with the charge is going to be very beneficial for him. But it's not hard to envision a path to him being an NBA player as kind of a discount Al Horford type that can have some range, have some passing, is a very good defensive player as well. I feel good about the pick. Like, I feel good about all of our picks that are competing in Summer League. Even Luke Travers is out there having some fun, doing some stuff that looks encouraging for where he was picked in the draft.
Australian Drake Kirilenko over here, AK-47 Redux, looking very good. I think Mobley, you can see the he is proof in the pudding of, oh, damn, this three-point line's a lot further out. You can really see him heaving it up on certain possessions where it's like, and trying to speed up his release when it's like, buddy, you don't need to speed up your release. They're not guarding you yet.
Yeah.
You know, I think that stuff hasn't really come, but I think the handles looked really impressive. I think might even be better than Evans right now. In terms of just comfort taking it full court and not looking like he's going to get ripped, not picking up his dribble prematurely. And the passing is very, very good and very ambitious. And I think he'll be someone who would really benefit playing with better players around him. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's I think that he hasn't like blown the roof off, but I haven't seen anything to say to dissuade me from my opinion that he was a solid pick at 49.
Yeah, I feel really good about it. I guess the other Cav that deserves some mentioning is RJ Nembhard.
Too good for summer league, Nembhard over here. This guy is cooking everyone.
Yeah, he looks exactly like you'd hope. Someone that had a lot of experience playing, like practicing with the big club and played professionally with the charge. Like, he looks exactly like you'd hope. He's a good scoring guard and you feel good about that. I just love kind of the ebbs and flows of how we feel about these players. Like, even just looking at Twitter, like there was so much kind of consternation that, oh, the Cavs didn't pick like a big wing. They didn't address that need. And then all of a sudden everyone's ready to cut a bunch of established players from the Cavs to get Luke Travers out there. Like, he's fun. Like, he's fun. He does good stuff. He's very raw offensively still. I definitely think the plan of draft and stash makes sense. But you can see, like, the fact that he had 5 blocks as a small forward in his first summer league game and the passes he makes. It's really exciting. It just needs some polish on the offensive end. Even the passing, like, he threw one pass to Agbaji basically at his shins when he was open in the corner, and that the ball placement on that kind of a pass really determines whether or not that's a make a lot of the time.
Yeah, I think he's shown a lot of flashes. Can't shoot at all, clearly. Doesn't want to shoot at all, clearly, right now. And I think, you know, you look at a guy like that, he's probably a jumper away. from being an NBA player, just given his size and obvious feel for the game.
Kind of feels like Jetty back in the day.
I mean, I think Jetty was probably a better prospect just because he had a little bit more peak athleticism. Yeah. But, you know, I do think that Travers has shown enough where you go, okay, I get why you take a flyer on that guy. And if he turns into something, then you might have something. The guy wants to be the next Joe Ingles, and you kind of see that in his game. And he's clearly tough as hell. And, you know, it's been fun to watch him. So I think it's been a fun summer league so far, and I'm only excited to see more.
I'm excited as well. We're at the halfway point of the NBA offseason. Only a couple more months to go, Carter. You know what? It's going to be here sooner than you think, man. I'm excited for it. I'm excited for these last couple games from Summer League. Great. Feels great to be podcasting again, buddy. Great talking Cavs with you. There's so much to catch up on, and there's going to be a lot of us for us to talk about in the coming weeks. Big thanks to all of our audience. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so by leaving us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cavs.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.